angling, swaying to and fro.
Epic bulges, bulges can. They were they're just terrific for something like that, Roy.
It's one thing of bulges. Got the black cap on there, the plastic cap. That's not even, that's the perfect solution. Problem is, you'd have to make sure it doesn't drop, you know. I'm not sure your living quarters are, but, you know, you just got to get it out away from the house somehow. You know, maybe you have a picnic table or something you could leave it on?
No, I think Roy is worried about marauding wildlife. Now he's running that shotgun.
But the point is, ultimately, when I tell you what the solution is, I'll be interested if any of you think that these solutions are better. Because, you know, again, getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning or just kind of before I go to whatever, midnight, taking it into my backyard and putting it on top of my barbecue site and just leaving it overnight outdoors every night to sink it, again, strikes me as a little bit excessive requirement.
Hey, Jeff. Yeah.
Yes, Jeff? Jeff, are you out there?
That was
W-W-G. I heard the tick. Clever.
Hey, you could pick up.
Yes.
Sorry, I don't know if Mr. Clever was done with me, but let me see if I have better picture. Yeah, just FedEx it to yourself. And wear another watch for a day, and then it'll come back synced at FedEx to Colorado and back.
Okay, rather expensive, and, you know, if you're obsessive-compulsive, as I am some days, you want to resynchronize it at regular intervals. So that could turn to be very expensive.
So, it could be, oh, yeah, no, I'm just kidding. There's no way to emulate the signal at home with a Lincoln Fire or with something over the Internet.
Well, you're getting warm. I think I've kind of asked everyone every per patient. There's an app for that.
Of course, there's an app for everything.
Is it a frequency sine wave generator?
Partially. It's not a sine wave generator. When I first read about this, I almost for sure thought that this was just nonsense. You know, this is another trolling guy on the Internet. But the more I researched it, the more I found out that it makes sense if you actually think about it. There is an app that I bought for $1.98, and what it does is it grabs the time standard on the Internet, and it takes the data and uses it to produce a 20 kilohertz audio signal using a square wave. And square waves have harmonics. And the third harmonic of a 20 kilohertz audio signal is 60 kilohertz.
Wow.
Includes modulation on it.
Yep. It embeds the amplitude modulated signal. It sounds like a bunch of clicking. And you have to kind of put it really close together. You have to know where the antenna in the watch is, and you have to know where the speaker is. But if you figure that part out, it works.
It'll be with the question.
It has incredibly high third harmonic content.
Well, not high as high as I'd like it. It's kind of fiddly, but it's sufficient to sink it. Someone had a question?
Yes, KKLB. I'm curious. If it's an audio signal, So the waves being audio signals being manifested, well, through a speaker, what kind of a sound system would be able to reproduce a third order harmonic? Like, I think the most fidelity speaker only reproduces 20 cycles. But how, I'm just interested, how does it hear 60? That's interesting. Maybe through air or something?
No, you don't need the sound transducing. It starts as electrical signals going at 20 kilohertz, and with square waves, the 20 kilohertz electrical signal feeding the loudspeaker has a third-order harmonic of 60 hertz. So we're keeping it in the electromagnetic field, and very, very, very small amounts of that that's supposed to go to the speaker instead kind of gets emitted as extraneous electromagnetic interference signals that just so happen to be picked up by my citizen watch.
Well, wait a minute. Is there an output that goes to the doctor or something, or depending upon the computer?
You can do it leaking out of the cell phone. Theoretically, I haven't looked into it yet, but I'm going to do some experiments. You can also set up a ferrite loop type of situation and plug it into the earphone output of the cell phone and improve the efficiency of getting the RF into the circuit, so it wouldn't be quite as fiddly.
A speaker with an actual coil would do that job, or you wouldn't hear any of the frequencies too much.
The earbud in. They have the voice coil built in. So hold an earbud next to the watch. It's excited by that signal.
This one is a coil and not a piezo speaker or something.
Yeah, piezos are, you know, 1960s type of stuff these days, thankfully. It's kind of tinny. I tried that. It wasn't enough. I had to butt up where the speaker element was right next to the bottom of myself to get enough electromagnetic waves to truly synchronize.
The earbuds have a plastic case. The signal might bleed out easier. Your cell phone has a metal case. It probably shielded the signal line.
Well, yeah, it's probably shielding it somewhat, but there are slots, obviously, so that you can hear the speaker output. And, you know, like I said, that seems to work. I tried all the different other permutations. My iPad didn't work that well, I assume, because it had more shielding around it. I tried wrapping earpieces wire around it. I tried just sticking the earpiece right next to the watch. The only thing that kind of worked for me was just the regular iPhone that's kind of small, compact, and I just put up the volume bias. And not only was I able to sync that, but I have a cheap Chinese weather station that I've never been able to sync. Then I figured, what the hell? I'd give it a try. The only trick is you got to find where they're hiding the antenna. But after about three attempts, I found where they were hiding the antenna for the first time, owning it for about 2-3 years. I synced my weather station as well.
So, Roy, I think you're missing the most important part.
Clear? What would that be, Ed?
When your alarm clock goes off, jump out of bed excited to see if the damn watch synchronized instead of throwing your shoe at the alarm clock. Somebody said a query.
Yes, what's the query?
Casey, give me a query. The question is there any latency to is there like a delay, millisecond delay, something like that, to the, to all the various relay switches and what have you across the country to get to the iPhone and finally tell you exactly what time is it? And is there any correction to that yourself?
Well, there probably is, but I guess the beauty of the system is all my synchronized computers in my house probably have a functionally the same latency. So the beauty is once I was syncing it, I could sit there with one eyeball on my newly synchronized watch and the other one on the time display of my laptop, and they both flipped over at the same instant. So, you know, I mean, plus or minus a few milliseconds, we're all right.
So you're too well, thank you. Works for me. Plus or minus a few microhertz.
Well, actually, there's a real science to that.
Yeah, I mean, there is, and you know, if I ran a time lab, I probably would have much more sophisticated methods to do all kinds of things. I'm more than happy with what I got, which is basically most of the clocks in my house are identical. I take some kind of weird joy in watching everything kind of turn over at the same exact instant as far as my human abilities to perceive the flow of time is concerned.
That's about 200.
W.S. Glenn.
That's not a problem.
LBQ with a comment.
Okay, Paul first, and then LBQ. Paul?
Okay, when I set the UTC on my clock, I go to UTC time. Now you put that in and you get an exact time on your screen. And match that with WWV, you know, I'll go to 20 megahertz and listen to the tones, and it's like right on the money, right on the money, within a second, right on the money, boy, exact. So I'm guessing you're probably, you know, whatever website that is, that app that you have is probably exact.
I have a story on this very subject.
Okay, and one second, we still have LVQ, and I just want to respond. Paul, I use something called Net Time Protocol. There's a protocol that spreads out and synchronizes time in on the internet. I think the master clock in the United States is the NIST over in Colorado, but Columbia University has a NTP server that's wired directly to that, and I'm directly wired to the Columbia University NT. So a couple times a day, background, I have a little applet on all of my computers that syncs the time. LBQ, you wanted to say something?
Roger, W12HQ, quickly. That was a wonderful question, and congratulations on you presenting it so well. And you're a testament to the old adage that persistence wears out resistance. So great job, Roy. This W2LVQ, we're going to be there for the evening. And good night to everybody.
Okay, very good. Thank you for very kind words. Yeah, when I kind of discovered this, and I wasn't looking at all for a TechNet puzzle, I kind of looked at it cross-eyed. At first, like I said, I didn't believe it. It sounds too easy. But once I wrapped my head around it and figured out why it should work and tried it and it did work, I said, I got to use it this Sunday night. So I hope everyone enjoyed it. It's not exactly amateur radio, but it's real amateur radio adjacent. So I hope you did enjoy it and you learned something. You know, very few people apparently are aware that there is an application. It's for anyone interested. It's called Clockwave. I have a phone. I don't know if Android has the same application, but like I said, it's relatively simple. You just have to sort of figure out where the speaker of your device is and where the atomic clock antenna is in your clock, and the thing works. Anyway, Ed, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, can I have about 2 minutes for a story and a history I have with something very related?
Certainly.
Once upon a time, we were flight testing some equipment. In 1974, I was bouncing over the Indian Eastern Shore, an old gravel trap, DC-4, to go to equipment, testing a landing system. And we had a GPS receiver and an oscilloscope on the plane, and there was a box And what we do, before we call, we repeat up WWB, we line up everything on the oscilloscope, and we would use the oscilloscope to line up the actual tone sine wave of the GPS 2 tone to an equivalent tone generated by a timing unit to line it up within about 50 microseconds. But what was happening was, we were recording data, we were being tracked by a radar on the ground, and everything had to be synchronized to incredibly high precision. And it was 10 milliseconds had to be allotted to the RF signal here from Fort Collins, Colorado, to the Virginia Beach shore. So we're talking like 10 milliseconds is a possible delay across the country. We had to align it within microseconds, and thank God, Roy, you don't have to. And then you get into the internet and stuff bouncing all over. And he states that the source of the signal is correct, but since you don't know where it is, you have a variable time delay due to the propagation mode, on the wires and through the circuitry, and maybe even in a processor.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's sort of a given, but we're talking about latency errors in the milliseconds. And you're not that anxious. I'm okay with milliseconds. Unfortunately, I have some clocks that lose about 10 seconds every day. And it annoys the heck out of me. So, my new citizen, I had it for 3 days. I think it lost a second. Because when I got it, it seemed to be synced, but over 3 days, it kind of lost that second. And seconds I can perceive. Milliseconds, not so much. So I'm happy. Yeah, what can I tell you?
Power are perfect because the power companies actually tweak the line frequency to keep the box perfect.
Yeah, that's true. Unfortunately, I'm trying to think if I have any AC-driven clocks. I don't think so. I think they all kind of run on batteries these days. At least mine do.
Yeah, by the way, I don't know if most people realize those AC-driven clocks actually run basically off the 55 frequency. And the power pools will tweak it a little in the middle of the night to just make up, over an hour to make up a second or so.
Yeah, I've heard that. Like I said, in the old days, where I have an atomic clock on the wall in my dining room. There's a site right behind it when I was there. We had electric, plug-in old clock. But like I said, usually these days it's just more convenient to screw around with plug wires and such. And, you put it in a couple of D cells, they're good for a couple of years. Yes, Jeff?
Just a quick comment. When you're aligning, your radio and you're using, you have these expensive gear, it's good to have it clocked into a GPS geo because 1 millisecond, which we can barely detect with our eye or ear. Maybe some people are better at it than I am, but 1 millisecond difference over the course of the QSO is 1,000 hertz, and as we know, in at HF frequencies. 1,000 hertz is going to make a difference.
Yes, indeed. My Flex 6700, it was a Christmas sale. They threw in the GPSDO, the disciplined oscillator, for free. And every so often, I would find myself on, say, the 10-meter net, and some strange man would be off frequency, and I would explain that he's off frequency, and he'd say, "That is impossible, sir. I have a military radio, and military radio accurate." And so I said, "Well, GPSDO is accurate too, so one of us is less accurate than the other." But you are quite right. For people who can get a GPS disciplined oscillator, they're loads of fun.
What generation, how old is that military radio?
I don't know. The guy was a clod. You know, I mean, just his inclination and his intonation. I don't know. It's how he said he had a modern-day military. His assumption, I believe, if I could see into the mind of a strange man, was that anything that was military is still up to military specs. The military specs are obviously better than civilian specs. So he outranked me.
No, I bought the military spec, and the customer, the end user, specified the tolerance, and the manufacturer has to meet the specified tolerance, and no better, just better does not get you any price point. And all I have to say is, in the end, the residential synthesis finally solved that nonsensical problem that everybody's been arguing about for millennia.
Yeah, sometimes modern technology makes things better. Other times, as we talked earlier tonight, it ends up making things worse. So, you know, six to one, half a dozen the other. It kind of balances itself out.
No, I've been saying this for years. An HF radio is a great digital synthesis. It's the radio I wanted all my life.
Okay, STOs often are direct synthesis.
General, yes, but I can't guarantee you won't find an exception.
No, you can screw up any good design. I mean, you know, the future is here. I've always been a major fan of software-defined radios. I've talked about them endlessly, and like I said, I have a Flex Radio 6700. The hardware is fantastic. The software is kind of old. Unfortunately, I think Flex Radio has found greater profit in the military contract, and so they have spent a lot more resources in their secret stuff that they can't tell anyone about than their commercial stuff. My operating system is practically about 4 years old. They haven't upgraded the software for a long, long time. The feature sets are those that they thought would come to fruition 7 years ago and haven't had there. So I'm a little disappointed with their research and development and programming. One of the beauty of software-defined radios is that with a different firmware update, you basically have a different radio. It's defined by its software. So only your imagination and what you pay programmers is the only limitation to some aspects of SDRs.
Well, I'm madly in love. Don't make me choose between my FD-891 and my granddaughter.
Hey, you got your tongue firmly in your cheek there.
Yeah, my granddaughter wins, but you get the idea.
Yes, indeed. I love my little 6700. I've had to, unfortunately, send it back to Austin, Texas, way too many times. The last time, like any computer, and SDRs are more computer than they are radio, the fans, the mechanical fans fail. They're somewhat proprietary, and they're thermally glued to field programmable gate arrays that when they originally were sold, I think the individual price for each chip was $1,000, so I wasn't going to pry those chips from the heat sink. I had to send it back to London. Oh, well, that was this edition of the Weimark TechNet puzzle. I hope you enjoyed it. If I come up with something civilly soon, I think my TechNet puzzle was about 3 months ago, which is approximately the frequency of discovering something interesting, novel. If any of you guys out there have any similar and want to, as I mentioned at the beginning of every single technical net, just email it to me. You can look me up on QRZ if you didn't remember what I told you earlier, which is It's mailbag@ac2gs.com, but, you know, you can find me. Anyway, any other comments? Or if failing that, if anyone has any other questions or comments in general for tonight, we still have about 15 minutes.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Did you feel the earthquake over by you?
Yes, indeed. I didn't know what to think of it about the first second or two, but by the 20th second, I think it was an earthquake. You know, I ran out of other options, but that's the time I have felt an earthquake in Brooklyn. There might have been others, but I might have missed them, but I think it was something like 12 years ago. I forget exactly when, but this one seems a lot longer than the first one.
I was told it was 2011, and I remember one back around 1980.
Okay. I almost doubled with Ed. Okay. Yeah, I thought a helicopter was coming down. Yeah, I don't look too far from the airport. And I looked, I said, man, no helicopter. This thing must have been an earthquake. Okay, back to you.
Yeah, that must have been the 2011. I don't remember the 1981. But it seems significantly longer. One of these days to look up what was the duration of the 2011 one, because it just, for whatever reason, seemed, you know, much shorter. This one just kind of kept going on and on. I think it was something like 20 seconds.
I heard 20 seconds, right? That was my guess.
Well, what can I tell you? I blame New Jersey. That's where it came from. That was its center.
Okay, understood. Yeah. It went all the way upstate. I would have thought that upstate wouldn't have been as interesting. There's more bedrock going up that way. It did say Long Island, because we have softer ground here. You know, everything's going to move a lot easier here. But yeah, I thought it was pretty powerful.
I have to disagree with all this, guys. I think the bedrock was transmitted much better than the glacial outwash of Long Island.
Yeah, well, I was listening to the experts. That's what they said, you know. It was a shallow earthquake, so the land up top is going to, you know, push a lot, where it's going to slow down with the, you know, the stronger surface and going upstate. But, you know, who knows? I thought it was pretty calm. I thought all the shingles would rip it off my hand, that's what it sounded like.
It just gives you kind of indication of how minuscule we humans are in reality. The ground can shake under us anytime we want.
I have a story about nature.
Okay.
In 1980, Mount St. Helens erupted in a pyroclastic glow. I was there. 1993, and 13 years later, the devastation was so unbelievable. We're driving towards Mount St. Helens. We're still about 25 miles away. We suddenly realized, off on the right, there were no trees. On the left, the forest is fine. And the closer we get, now the trees are left disappear. But then when we got there, they had built a visitor center. And the visitor center, you know, really looked like Mount Helens. And I had this feeling in my gut that something is horribly, horribly, horribly wrong. And want to hear part two? In 2016, the SYL and I spent a week in Italy. Rome, Pompeii, the Amalfi Coast, they're all pretty close to each other, and it was a nice little trip. At Pompeii, I saw this in Vesuvius, and I stopped dead in my tracks. identical to Mount Sinai. The exact same top of the mountain is missing, and the side I was looking at had this three-shot side. You see where the side of the mountain blew off, and this is taken for 30, 40, 50 miles. And then I realized Pompeii was taken out in the pyroclastic.
Yeah, Mother Nature's a bitch.
Now, we were on a tour, and I mentioned that to the tour guide, and she was somewhat taken aback, and then she said, yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, it never ceases to amaze me. I have a book that I'm finishing up soon, and I'll hopefully put it up on my link page as a little book review. It's called Fluke. It's an interesting book that kind of agrees with me, so I like it. And that human beings are practically incapable of understanding the irrational, non-conscious aspects of the universe. You know, Mother Nature just does what it does. It doesn't have good intent, doesn't have bad intent. It's not out to get you. There's no one out to get you. It just, stuff happens, and then you die. So, Mother Nature can be a bitch, and it doesn't happen for a reason. Because you kicked the cat or whatever, it has nothing to do with that. It's just the universe winding down, obeying the laws of physics in interesting ways that occasionally step on your face.
Not divine intervention, but how some people think of it.
Oh, there is divine intervention.
Yeah. Okay. You wish to magnify that concept? Explain it?
Of literature from 3,000 to 4,000 years ago. Okay? Now, we all know in the Old Testament about the waters of the Red Sea receding and then coming back. All for that. But apparently, every religion of the Mediterranean era, of the Mediterranean Sea area, has a similar story. And they think it's the island of Santorini, which was an active volcano, exploded, devastated the island, and caused all kinds of tidal waves all up and down the Mediterranean. And one thing tidal waves can do is drain the sea and have it come back. And I have kind of felt, today's television and movie writers are descendants of storytellers. And as good stories, you want to point to that, of course. What a perfect opportunity to make the point you want to make and illustrate it based on what you have seen. Maybe change the time scale, maybe change the detail, but usually to embellish the story.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of biblical scholars that suggest that these are allegories, they're metaphors. They kind of talk in fantastic ways to kind of focus in on day-to-day concepts of life and living and such. So there's a lot of things that were taken from historical bases. The Great Flood myths go as far back as ancient Mesopotamia. And Mesopotamia means between two rivers. The rivers used to flood. And so I'm sure that their flood myth is based upon real floods of Euphrates and the other, I guess, Nile. There were two rivers. So a lot of these things have some basis, but they're kind of out of time, and the numbers are kind of either magnified or minimized or otherwise adjusted. So there's a lot of metaphors out there that are people actually believe in. You know, I mean, you talk about the ark, the boat you can't put that many animals in a boat. So, you know, I mean, lots up with that one. But the guy built a museum based on it.
Well, Roy, if somebody said, no, I'm a devout believer, and I believe Moses and the Israelites got across while the water was out, yeah, I'd let it go. Give it to them. That's how I can feel.
People are free to believe whatever they want to believe. As law don't force me, I have no problem with it. It's when you start to make laws that cover me based on what you think happened that it gets problematic. I mean, there are Scientologists out there who actually believe Xenu. I hope I didn't annoy any Xenu believers out there.
About Nostradamus.
Anyway, we seem to have hit a pause once again. Anyone with any comments, questions, what have you?
AF2PN with a question.
Certainly.
I've got a radio, brand new radio in my car, which is HD radio. I was not familiar with it, now I'm barely familiar with it. But I want to know how it works, not technical way how it works, but how does the consumer service? What I'm observing is I'm listening to HD radio parked in front of my house, it's coming in beautifully, and then it drops out. A couple of seconds later, it comes back, and for a while, and then it drops out and comes back. And I want to know how it's supposed to work, because I'm not familiar with it at all. Thank you.
What frequency band is it on?
It's FM. In fact, one of the stations I tried to listen to was CBS FM 101.1 HD channel, or whatever you call it, number 3.
Yeah, but that's been around for a number of years now. I'm wondering if your radio isn't defective. I mean, I've been in many cars that have that problem.
Well, that answers my question. The radio's brand new, so it's likely then that it's defective. Thank you.
I've heard of many things like symptoms like you're describing, but not in this context.
It might be an antenna problem. It might be some kind of interference locally. It's high definition radio. It's hybrid digital as well. So it's a digital mode that's high resolution sound, but the signals can be interfered with as well.
Oh, absolutely.
When I'm driving various different locations, and I decided I'd try it parked, one of the places I parked was Dorchester, the gym, which is up on a hill a little bit, and parked there, and sure enough, dropped out. Another place, right in front of my house in Harrison, dropped out. So the idea of the radio being effective is likely. The antenna's been on the car since 2009, and the radio was in there was working just fine. I got this one for the backup camera.
Okay. Haven't really looked into car radios that much lately. If anything, some of them are going bye-bye. There's a big push among the manufacturers to get rid of AM radios in cars. FM might have a longer span.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, this is AM, FM, CD, all that crap. Here it is. All junk is in there. But I'll take it back and ask the guy, you know, hey, what's going on here? And let him try to solve it. But now that I'm armed with the information that gave me that it doesn't drop out, you know, there's something wrong, either antenna, installation, the radio, whatever. Well, thank you very much. Good information. Yes.
Hold on. I was assuming you had solid tips. you're out near maximum range, you could very well get that. And to mention the town names, I think, are up in northern Westchester. Might be out of range, okay?
Well, it's not northern Westchester. I'm 22 miles northeast of the city. That's a rough approximation. I don't know what the range is. WCBS FM, the normal station, comes solid as a rock all the time.
All right, well, let me just point out something, Tama. Okay, Roy, is it a thought?
Sure.
Back in the days of analog television, if the signal was getting weak, it was getting snowy. And you could almost choose by the amount of snow as the sort of intensity to tell you the signal level. When they went to digital and came down to 9, the snow went away, but what happened was it got replaced with it was there, or it wasn't. And as you find, sometimes things just hang up. If you're out of range now on a television, if you're trying to receive a high-definition television signal over the air, and you are marginal in range, it comes in and out, so digital stuff does not stay. Either it's perfect or it's gone. And there is a very clear threshold, and it can be even more annoying than whoever wants on a television.
Yeah. Ed, I understand how the dropout would operate within the, you know, the digital framework. I can understand. This is something that could drop out until it reacquires. What I didn't know was, you know, signal strength. I don't have a means to judge signal strength on HD because I have no experience. All I have to compare it with is regular FM radio and the fact that I have gone to different locations with the car. And what I can do is find a really high location and go to that and see what happens. But the way it's supposed to work is just keep dropping out. Now, like you say, at the fringe, I don't know what the fringe is from CBS FM, broadcast in New York, 68 watts. And of course, you've got three channels of digital plus the analog channel. How that affects the signal, I can't say. I got to say it's going to be weaker, but I don't know. I got no numbers, no engineering information.
You ever take the car closer to the city?
Yeah, I can do that as an experiment, and which I will do, but I was hoping somebody here could maybe say, if I'm in the right range, it should drop out. Because I didn't know if the way the damn thing was broadcast would include dropouts. But you can answer that for me.
Well, that's my only guess. If it happens when you're getting closer to the train, there isn't something definitely wrong with that radio.
Thank you, and that's very good information for me. I can appreciate on what you told me. Very helpful. Thank you.
As opposed to CBS, which would take 5 minutes to lock on.
Well, this radio claims on one of its screens, it defines 21 satellites. So, GPS is not a problem. As far as I can tell, it's working solid.
Wait a minute, you think the Bush radio has GPS in it?
This radio has everything in it. AM, FM, Sirius radio, HDO, CD thing, GPS. It's got, you know, you look at the screen on it, see your backup camera. It also gives you the map of where you're going, navigation, with a separate antenna for that. I mean, this thing, I don't think there's any more features you can get in one of these damn things.
But you're saying it works, drops out, and then comes back. How long does it drop out for? And verify it works, drops out, and eventually comes back.
Okay, that's strictly on the HD channel on FM. Nothing else have I observed a dropout on. CD plays solid, AM plays solid, regular FM plays solid, GPS screen is solid, the backup camera screen is solid. The only dropout is the HD. Now, it varies. Sometimes it'll drop out for like 1 second. Sometimes it'll drop out for maybe 3 seconds. Sometimes maybe 5 seconds. When I'm driving, it's different, I guess, because I'm driving. But I haven't really had it long enough to make a real solid record of driving versus park. But still, you're trying to diagnose something without, you don't have enough information. I don't have enough. The key that you gave me was that the way it's broadcast, if I'm in range and I have a properly working radio, I should hear solid cop, no dropout whatsoever. I didn't know that.
WB2IKC, Mr. Connor.
Yes, IKC.
Yeah, okay. Just for further information, HP Radio, Wikipedia has a great article on how it works. And apparently it uses OFDM modulation using audio compression called HPC, which is similar to the MPEG-4 standard, but not quite compatible to it, using a modified discrete cosine transform compression algorithm. And it's invented and promulgated by a company called Ubiquiti. And this is the FM broadcast service and the AM services, too, in the United States. Broadcast on an adjacent channel to the station that you're listening on. The dropout is equivalent to pixelization. And comments that either you get a signal or you don't. But the question is, what happens when the signal drops out? When you're mobile, one thing that some of the techniques use is that they can buffer the signal. So in other words, what you're listening to on the radio is actually maybe a few seconds behind where the radio is actually broadcasting. Momentary drops can be figured out by the receiver, and the receiver can catch up by using that buffer memory. But some receivers are better than others. Back to that. But.
Okay, sir. Ed, if you figure out what's going on with the radio, please come back and tell us. I'm curious.
Okay, I will. I'm hoping I figure it out. And I'll add one other thing in case people who are listening don't understand how this thing works. It actually has a decoded the compression. So the computer inside the radio is operational. And if that computer has a glitch, that could cause a dropout that has nothing to do with the signal. Or if some critical portion of the signal, and I don't fully understand the modulation technique, so I may be wrong about this, but I'm just thinking there could be a critical portion of the signal which causes the computer to have to pause a second to do the decoding. And if that drops out, it doesn't, it can't do it. So it's very interesting. And but the fact that it breaks, Ed has given me the critical piece that I didn't have. If you've got a radio properly working on the HD, and, you're in range, et cetera, it should be solid. I didn't know if the damn thing was new and was popping in and out because of what they're doing. But Ed says it's been around for a bunch of years. I didn't know. So thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
I can assure you that everybody on Earth, everybody was having that problem. You would have heard about it.
Yeah, it also depends on how people use FM anymore. I'm sure there are people who stick with their satellite radios or they stream them through some internet access as well. So, who knows? It's interesting. Hopefully, Ed will come back and tell us what the problem might be. I'm still betting that it's probably just reached the edge of the digital reception. Digital signals can go off a cliff rather heinously.
I do have something to add.
Feel free.
The technical word is multiband. Multiband is we live more urban than more so, in a world of and your radio signals are bouncing off of everything, coming at you from all of you. And sometimes you get, particularly in a weak signal, where you can get a copy of your signal coming in from a different angle, 180 degrees out of phase, at roughly the same signal level, disappear. There's something known as curve advantage, where when you're driving in a weak signal area with an analog system, it sounds almost like you're driving past the pink fence until the signal comes and goes. That is multipath cancellation, you know, reinforcement cancels. And that is very, very, very dependent on stationary versus how fast you're moving. So be attentive. Does this happen when you're stationary? Does it happen when you're moving? If it's moving, does it appear to be related to whether you're moving slowly or rapidly? Sorts of things.
Yeah, I already thought about that. That's why I parked the car and tested it in front of my house and also at the gym I go to, which is up on a bit of hill, two different towns. And both places, while it's parked, it happens. It also happens when I'm going. I don't think it's picking fencing. It's picking fencing off of something in motion other than my car. Possibly airplane, other cars, I don't know.
As I said earlier, if you take this close to the map, see if the problem goes away. And if it doesn't, take that radio out, tow it out to sea, and fix it.
I'll take a tray, man.
I hear you. I'll take it back and have the man sink it. Have the man I bought it from live up to the year guarantee, you know. I like the way you said it, though, Ed.
It's not a reason why I stole it from somewhere. I forget where.
Okay, very good. We'll hopefully figure this out in a future technical net. Thank you, Ed. WFAF2P is an Ed, and WD2EAV is Ed, so got a bunch of Eds. Thanks, everyone, who participated tonight. I hope you learned something, especially how to sync your comet clocks if you got some that are kind of sluggish. And I hope you'll join us for next Sunday, but right now it's time for full WS2N. It's a SpaceNet report, and no doubt there'll be a part of the eclipse. Make sure if you're going to look up, wear proper eye gear. Don't experiment on your eyeballs. They're the only thing that you have. So anyway, thanks for everyone participating. Over to you, Paul.
Thanks, Roy. TC2GS, WS2N. This is SpaceNet report for the TechNet. Yeah, the eclipse, of course. They've been talking about that like for months on any news station I put on. And, of course, that's going to happen tomorrow. At Ronk Hockum's time, at 2:12 it starts. And they have a maximum time at 3:26. And it ends at 2:37. So it's hours and 25 minutes of eclipse bliss. So this is going to be a total eclipse as opposed to an annual eclipse. Annual eclipse, you know, the moon will move in front of the sun, but it won't completely cover the sun. It'll still have a complete ring around it. This is a total eclipse where you won't have that large ring, and we won't have it here on Long Island. We'll have 90%. You know, you have to go north. You know, you see it on TV. They're at Niagara Falls, Syracuse, all over everywhere. And hopefully, we have clear skies. I think down south in Texas, they might have some clouds, but it's going to come through Mexico and Texas, go up to the middle of the country, and it's going to exit through Maine. Let me drop it.
380.
Yes, Ed, go ahead.
I think you said something a little unclear. You always get the rays where you only have a zenith of the sun or the moon during a total eclipse. And around here, it will be a crescent, the crescent moon. And so you said 90%. Well, I want to know, does 90% mean 90% of yours is a complete crescent? Or 90% is good and only looks like, you know, something to bite out of water on the sun.
Yeah, well, they're talking about 90% of the sun being gone. You know, and the map that I have, I should put it on Roy's website. Anyway, the one map that I have shows the different areas along the actual path. So, you know, if you look at Long Island, we're in the 90% group. A little further south, you know, you're in the 85. But these numbers stretch not only, you know, west, but also, you know, east and west of the line. And it goes all the way down to 5% of the sun, let's say, all the way out to, Idaho. You know, they're going to get like 3 or 5%. So they'll just see a little piece missing from the sun. That's where those numbers come in.
Wait a minute. I'll choose. Are you saying 90% of the sun will be visible, or 90% of the sun will be hidden?
90% will be gone. So you'll only have 10% light.
I think it'll be a thin crescent. Every once in a while, after we've all looked up and seen a very thin crescent moon, so it looks that shape, although obviously much, 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 much brighter.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we'll still have daytime here. And, you know, it'll get a little dark. But if you go up north, where totality is, then they say it's going to get very dark. So, you know, I don't know if it's been dark enough for my solo light to come on, but if you're up north, anyway, we'll see how it works out. The group that is really involved with this is called the Ham Science Group, Ham Radio Science Citizens Investigation. And they have hams all over the country, but including Long Island, that are going to be participating. They're going to see what kind of contacts that they make before the eclipse, and during, and after. And I'm going to be one of those. They had an article that actually came out yesterday in the paper, Saturday's paper, and they interviewed Glad, the Suffolk County Radio Club. They gave very good information. And they also called me, a fellow from Newsday, reporter, and he got a lot of information from me. He stayed on the phone, I guess, about 20 minutes. And time was going, and I could tell he was starting to get interested in what amateur radio was all about. I told him about the TechNet, and he had lots of questions. But anyway, paper, they, toward the end of that, they quote me as telling them what I plan on doing not only participating with this group, but also going out and actually looking at them. I have a welding shield, so they actually put that information into the Newsday site, the Newsday article. So, a lot of fun. We should see how this works out tomorrow. So I'll definitely try 80 meters. That's my goal. I'm going to try 80 meters CW. Let me drop it. what I did was actually today at the 24 hours before the eclipse, I went on 80 meters and made sure I don't hear anybody. I sent CQ, ZQ, and nobody came back to me on 80 meters at the time before. And, of course, 80 meters comes alive. Usually, almost all the time, I could always make a contact. And that's going to be the goal. I want to see what happens around eclipse time. But that's duplicating nighttime. The ionic sphere should be changing. So I'll see if I can make a contact. If I can't, that's good information, too. Eventually, we'll send the information into this ham radio citizen investigation group. And they'll take all this data from all these people. And I guess somewhere down the road, scientists will use it. They're involved with NASA and other groups. Let me drop it. Any questions or comments?
Paul, this is Charlie.
Good evening, Charlie. How are you?
Hey, great. Okay, the Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club will be at the Lighthouse tomorrow from about 1:30 to 3:30.
Yeah, that's the time. But I'm going to quit right afterwards at 3:30. maximum is 3:26. That's good, Charlie. The Suffolk County Radio Club is going to be at the Mauritius Library. They're set up over there. I know a few people from Marcus Club to be involved. They got my name from, they called Weimar. And that's what happened there, John. Very good. Great South Bay is going to be at what lighthouse?
That is correct. At Captree, just over the next Captree Bridge. What kind of radio reception do you believe we're going to get tomorrow?
I really don't know. You know, the last time this group did this was actually last October. They had an eclipse, not a total eclipse, an annual eclipse. That was actually last October, and that went from Washington through through the west part of the country, and it exited somewhere. Texas. And they did this. And from what I heard from this fellow, Ed WX2R, he was the one that did the presentation for Limark. He was going to go to lime.org and bring up the YouTube and you'll find the one dealing with the eclipse. Very good presentation. He went about an hour. Good job. Just terrific. And they're still evaluating that information from last year. We'll see. Now, that was on a Saturday. This one's on a Monday, so everybody participating will have to either be off from work or retired. But I'm going to give it a try on 80 meters, John.
I'll be on this channel, and I'll be on the East Coast Reflector tomorrow.
Okay, very good. I'm going to be on three dots, 038. That's what I use. F5, 38. So we'll see how that works. But even if I don't get any contact, zero. That's information. That means they can evaluate that and they can say for 80 meters at 3.538, there was nobody else that contacted WS. I guess they'll probably put this
to their computers, with computers somewhere, and finally figure out what the story is. And the idea is to find out what happens with the ionosphere on a short, really like a short, very short night. Any other comments?
Comment, this is K2BTV.
Very good. K2BTV, go ahead.
You mentioned welding helmets. You said you have a welding helmet to look at the sun. Is there any special level that you can set the welding helmets? Go ahead.
I've looked at the partial eclipse years ago. No less than 10. The shield weight. I have 11, and they 12 is also very good. I would go with no less than 11 for the numbers for the shield. So I know a lot of people set the weight for them, which is these solar glasses. I haven't heard what numbers they are, but you could. Who was it? I think it was Ed was saying he was thinking about the glasses that they give you for when you go get your eyes dilated. They are no good. You need something really strong back there.
Yeah, very good. I appreciate that information. Well, I can set it up to, I think, 12, but I'm not sure the highest limit. But thank you very much for that information. This is K2BCD.
Oh, okay. Very good. You set up. You have a welding set up.
Yes, I do. I have quite a few setups here. I have the 250DX Miller. I have a Lincoln, all mode. It's multi-purpose. You can, do just about everything. But I have the helmets and everything else to go with it, so that's good. I appreciate the information. Thank you very much.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I'm a retired steamfitter, so I wound up getting one of these small buzz boxes, what they are. And good enough for what I do is reverse polarity and, E6010. Like a couple of the other rods, but I like the E6010. What do you have? Do you have a stick welding, or do you have any sticks?
I have TIG, I have MIG, and I also have the stick. Go ahead.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. When I was working, I got a little with TIG, but not MIG. I was a big fan of MIG. I like to take that up to do like anything with that. Just the last year, even welded copper. We used the copper wire, copper pipe. Copper wire just stripped off the insulation instead of the filler wire. I was surprised how much heat it took just to do that, but it came up nice. Any other comments dealing with the eclipse of tomorrow, WS?
Question everyone, why do you wait?
I heard YDY quite more.
Yeah, Paul, it's Hank. I'm just curious, where could you get glasses at this late date? Do you know of anybody who still has them in stock?
You mean these regular welding glasses or welding lenses? Is that what you're saying? Or I mean, if you really want to get that, I say they probably have some left at Harbor Freight. You can actually go there. If they do, you don't even need a welding shield. You can take two pieces of cardboard and put them in, blend in between them, tape it up real good, and make a little handle out of it. It's the way to do it. But are you talking about the glasses they're sending away for, or? Welding lenses.
Comment WD3AB.
guess Ed's recognized, but I was just asking about the welding lenses.
Yeah, you know, you could try Harbor Freight. You could actually... I don't remember seeing any welding stuff over at Lowell's, but Home Depot has some stuff. But definitely Harbor Freight has things like that. I really wonder with all the advertisements that are going on with the eclipse and the news, every channel you put on, I wonder if they would even have anything left. Maybe you go to Harbor for Daniel. The other station, go ahead.
Yes, it says W3AG. Let me just find an interview card. That it has made it to the news that local public libraries have them now. I have not been looking for them, but the reasons I won't bore you with, I had to visit several public libraries. But just on proof, I asked all of them. Oh, no, they just appeared before I was.
That's true. Yeah, I was in the library Saturday. Connecticut. And there was no ways there that welding lenses are good. And it, like I said, try to get an 11 or 12 if you manage to get to a place that has them. That would be the best bet. You have real nice welding shield too. Then they have the ones that instantly turn off when you strike it off. Which I don't have the other side. I never got used to the other ones. People love it. I like the old fashioned one. I like to open the shield, and close with my hand. Any comments? WS1. I'm leaving time for echoing, but I'm sure. Okay, just to move on a little bit. Excuse me. There was a piece of space junk that hit a house down in Florida. It turns out it came out of the ISS. Can you imagine that? I mean, it's a couple of pound item flying through this guy's roof. Said his son was in the house, but he was in the other room. He threw the roof, through the floor, like on the first floor. They don't have basements there, but they made it through the floor, the first floor. But it was a cylindrical tube. A couple inches long, about 2 pounds. But I would expect this thing made it up to probably around 130 miles an hour by the time it hit. I think that's terminal velocity. They know it came from a pallet that was on the ISS. They replaced all the stuff on the space station. Over maybe about 3 or 4 years, and they had these the old fashioned nickel metal hydrates, but they were a nickel type of three. And after eventually changed them out to lithium ion, made in Japan, and they call them many different space warps. They had these pallets that were left over when they were done. And they just, let them go. Sure enough, they eventually deorbited. How long that took, I'll have to find out. I guess it probably took a year or two. And eventually, they were supposed to burn up. This part didn't make it. Made it through, well, 250 miles up where the space station is. Eventually, it's going to be in atmosphere and managed to find this guy's house. That must have really something. Anyway, he called up NASA and had to figure it out. It really belonged to them. And actually, the Japanese palace, you know, the Japanese were the ones that launched all these batteries. They would send up 12 at a time. Correction, 9 out of 10 at a time, and they wouldn't have 12 that would return to Earth. And these things weighed like 400 pounds each. Anyway, they were on these big pallets. Anyway, that's always a possibility. Any comments?
Paul, maybe they just dropped it out of space and just zipped right down to Earth.
Yeah, you can't really do that, you know. You can't open the door and just, like, push it down to Earth. I mean, it's going to go with you. 17,500 miles with the space station. They have to... Actually, they push it forward. Push it in the forward direction. Now, it's counterintuitive, but it's eventually, actually finding up to a lower orbit, and by doing it, by actually going forward, you're actually increasing the speed relative to the ground, and eventually it gets kind of faster and faster. Probably takes, I don't know, I'm going to guess a year before it got low enough. You know, they didn't have thrusters on this stuff to do that. Actually, they do that quite a bit. They get rid of some space junk. Most of it goes into the physics progress vehicle or dragon vehicle. Or the Japanese, once they go up, they have a lot of cargo vehicles that attach to the space station. They fill it all up with stuff. Or some of the stuff that was on the outside of the space station, they don't bring back in. Inside the space station, they just sort of push it. Eventually, they figure it's going to burn up. Well, this one didn't. Any comments?
Yeah, I got a comment for Joe on space that they had 2 rocket launches in a weekend, plus they had another rocket sitting just waiting in case something went wrong.
Yeah, I heard they were trying to do 3 within like a couple of hours, you know. Not from the same country. You know, they'll launch like 1 from Vandenberg, California, and then maybe 2 down in Florida, the launch complex 40, and launch complex 39A. The right to those 2 locations. But yeah, there's so many launches. Just recently, they've gotten up to their 300th launch. I think 256 boosters have been returned. Second stage. And that doesn't come safely back. That, you know, they burn that up. Or they fueled it. It burns up. They usually plan on burning up both of the South Pacific or the Indian up. Yes. It's becoming commonplace, Charlie. They should have brought around 150 or more launches this year.
They're going to come pretty close to the 150 launches. I think they got, 8 in the last 3 weeks?
You know, I got to the point where I can't even cover them all. When I saw a line, I'd go, well, just another one. Hundreds of them that's dedicated to that. Each star line that brings up, well, now they bring up 22 satellites. They used to bring up 52. But now they've made the satellites bigger. So you can't fit as many on each launch. They used to launch like 50 at a time, so, you know, to that stuff right now that's over, well, Elon Musk said there's over 6,000. Last I heard it was 5,800 satellites, close to 6,000 solid satellites, all functioning. It's interesting, I have this app on my phone, Stellar or something, and you look at it, any part of the sky, and you zoom in on that sky, and you see little things moving, so you zoom in a little closer, and sure enough, it tells you, you know, Starlink satellite number 2,423 or something. They're all moving in that way. A lot of satellites up there now, and it's only the beginning. He has plans of putting like 30,000 of these things up, and he's not the only one. Blue Origin plans on putting the Kuiper satellites up, all for broadband. He wants to do a minimum 3,500 satellites. OneWeb is up there with 600 for broadband drops. China, they plan putting up like 20,000 of these things eventually. I don't think they have any up yet. So, you look at the sky and you say, you know, if I'm an astronomer and I'm looking at a star, all of a sudden it's going to blank out for a split second. You know, that's kind of weird. You know, the satellite goes in front of it. But that's what they're doing. All the broadband, so people can look pictures they can. I don't know. They also say they now could use it for some cellular. Where I can take out my cell phone and it goes that way. That's coming. They're starting to do that now.
But don't you think it's going to get kind of crowded up there with all these satellites? We're going to send a rocket up and, you hit a satellite.
But yeah, it's definitely getting more crowded. But supposedly, they have an exact location of every one of these things. You have government with NORAD. They say every one is logged. It's 4 inches or more in diameter. They have it logged. You know, probably tied into some gigantic Cray computer somewhere, figuring out all the different locations, where they are, how fast they're going, whether or not they're going to hit one another. And so far they're pretty lucky. You know, there's been a couple of crashes over, you know, maybe two or three. And then the last 30 years, they've been doing this type of thing.
I got one question. Did they take engines on these last two SpaceX from a Falcon 9 to a Raptor?
Oh, no. They're still Merlin D engines. That's what they use for the Falcon 9. There's 9 Merlin D engines on them. The Raptors are just for Starship. And they've launched 3 full-size Starships so far. And everyone has not really... all 3 of them have not really made it to orbit yet. So, Raptor engines... They are improving the Raptor engines. There's different versions of them. They're more complicated and heavier. And now they're getting smaller. And, much more efficient, where they're actually putting out more thrust in each one. So I have heard that. I think they're working on a third version of the Raptor engine. It's a 3,300 booster. They put 6 on the Starship. That's the second stage. Out of the 6, they have all their engines, but 3 of them are designed for vacuum work, in other words, in space. The other 3 are designed to help get the Starship into orbit.
a lot of Raptor engines back to truck.
Thanks for clarifying that, Paul.
Okay, very good.
Three crew members returned from the International Space Station successfully, and that was Saturday as well. They came back on the Russian Soyuz craft, and on board was Laurel O'Hara. She's been up there for about 6 months. And she's a ham, by the way, KI5TOM. She made cool contact and stuff when she was up there. And she came back with the Russians. When she went up with the Russians. But she came back with a different Russian. You know, they have a complicated thing what they're doing. The flight that went up, one of the people is going to stay for 6 months. That was an American woman. The other two.